I've been told I have 8 minutes in which to cover the theme of Thanksgiving. Needless to say, much will be left unsaid. This is Thanksgiving weekend, one of my favorite times of the year. Unlike Christmas, it hasn't become associated yet with an orgy of commercialism. The two stories our scripture readers have just shared contain many elements that can teach us about the deeper meaning of thankfulness or gratitude, which is the word that I'll be using in this talk. In both stories, that of Naaman and the prophet Elisha, and of the 10 men and Jesus, people are suffering from leprosy, a terrible disease which causes them to develop severe skin lesions and leaves the body disfigured. But the worst thing in biblical times was that lepers were considered ritually unclean and therefore were socially isolated, at least when the disease was in its later stages. Another similarity in the two stories is that both Naaman and the Samaritan leper are foreigners, not Jews. This makes their story, the story of their healing, even more dramatic. Also, it is significant that both Elisha and Jesus require those who want healing to do something, something that will demonstrate that they have faith. Naaman has to immerse himself 7 times in the Jordan River, and the 10 lepers in the Luke passage have to show themselves to the priests. For Naaman in particular, this is the ultimate insult. The Jordan River is dirty compared to the rivers of Damascus. The Jewish religion is considered beneath him to even have participated in that religion. However, Elisha will not back down. You see, dipping oneself 7 times in the Jordan is clearly designed as a ritual cleansing. And as was pointed out in the story by Jana, there's much more going on here than just a cleaning of the skin. It's a cleaning of the heart. Now, if Naaman wants to be healed, he will have to humble himself and submit to the ritual as an act of faith and obedience. An act of faith and obedience which will also deal with his deeper problem, the human heart. For the 10 lepers that Jesus heals, Jesus is simply following Jewish protocol. Only the priests could pronounce a person free of leprosy and thus be welcomed back into Jewish society. However, let's be clear. While the lepers are required to do something, it is not their actions that heals them. This will only happen if God acts to heal them. The 10 lepers know this far better even than Naaman. That's why they cry out, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." Finally, there are also significant differences in the stories. As Jana's story pointed out, Naaman is a powerful military man. In the service of a dominating neighbor country, Aram, that, as it points out in the scripture passage, mounts consistent raids against the people of Israel. He has learned to expect people to show him respect and obey him. So when the prophet Elisha doesn't even bother to come out of his house and greet him, Naaman is understandably angry. Then to be told to wash in the Jordan, as mentioned before, is to add insult to injury. However, his servants remind him, if Elisha had asked him to do something really difficult, he would have done so. But what they don't realize, that is his servants, that for Naaman to humble himself in the Jordan River is, in fact, very, very difficult. Much more difficult than leading an attack in war. So Elisha's command exposes who he really is. Nevertheless, he has a conversion that is more than skin deep. He decides to humble himself and obey Elisha and is therefore healed. For the 10 lepers, who most likely came from the lower classes of society, in contrast to Naaman, especially the despised Samaritan, humility is not really the key issue. They are all quite willing to do whatever Jesus asks of them. Here the real issue is that only one of them, one of the ten, bothers to come back and personally thank Jesus, while Naaman didn't hesitate. Naaman rushes back to Elisha, who now comes out to meet him significantly. Now that Naaman has proved himself humble, Elisha is now willing to talk to him. And in front of all his soldiers, which must have been quite humiliating, he not only offers a present as a sign of his gratitude, but also declares his allegiance to the God of Israel. So here is a genuine sign of his conversion. He now wants to become a servant of the God of Israel. Now, what do these stories teach us about gratitude or thankfulness? Well, among others, and I'd like to emphasize this, gratitude doesn't just happen. In that sense, it's not natural. It's the result of a conscious decision. Naaman and the Samaritan had to make a deliberate choice to humble themselves, obey the command of the Lord, and then to go out of their way to thank the person who had helped them, or at least had been the agent of their help. Nine lepers chose not to do so. I don't know if Jesus is dealing with mathematics here or not, but does that mean that on average only 10% of people are truly grateful? Clearly, though, that's part of the story. We need to be willing to go out of our way to express and show gratitude. How often do we make that extra effort to thank people or God, even for the small things in life? Second, I think another thing these stories are telling us is that gratitude, at least to some extent, is most likely to result when we have had to do something ourselves, as these people had to. That is, we have had to exercise our faith. It's noteworthy, however, that even the nine lepers who didn't come back to thank Jesus were still healed. In other words, that wasn't contingent on them being thankful. Nevertheless, while the story doesn't tell us this, I suspect that those nine lepers missed out on the main fringe benefits that came with the thankful spirit that the Samaritan had. In other words, the Samaritan was blessed in many other ways. In fact, I believe that gratitude unlocks the door to a happy and fulfilling life. I read recently that gratitude actually, and they've demonstrated this through scientific studies, actually releases endorphins in the brain, which then result in feelings of joy. Practicing the discipline of gratitude, and I use that word deliberately, the discipline of gratitude, also helps one deal, of course, with the other challenges of life. A grateful person is much better able to deal with the loss of a loved one, a marriage breakup, a financial setback, other personal disappointments. And this is according to psychology. I remember 10 years ago, I was going through probably the darkest time of my life. And what saved me more than anything else, that helped me the most, was a book that I came across entitled Gratitude. And in that book, it described all the benefits of gratitude. And that combined with scripture passages such as Philippians chapter 4, when it tells us to be thankful in all things, to give thankfulness. Those two things kept me going more than anything else. Gratitude was the key to my healing. How can a person cultivate the discipline of gratitude? And I call it a spiritual discipline of gratitude. Philip Yancey states that one of the lessons of Cervantes' classic novel called Don Quixote, and I really like this because I've read Don Quixote's the story, is that the way to become a knight, and the story, of course, is about knights, is to act like a knight. And then Yancey goes on to say, or the way to become a saint is to act like a saint. In other words, don't wait for that magic moment when you suddenly feel like a saint or be a knight, but act as a saint or a knight. And that will trigger things in your life, which will then quite possibly result in you becoming a saint. Similarly, the way to become a grateful person, at least one way to become a grateful person, is to act and speak as a grateful person. And this requires discipline and, dare I say, practice. You know, think of it. Think of it as a workout for the spirit and the soul. In the same way that spending time in a gym or a yoga class is a workout for the body. I have to tell you this story. Sorry, I'm going over time. Last yoga class, I have a great teacher. Both Emma and I go to this teacher. And I have a very tight body. Muscles, tendons, everything is tight. And yet, at the end of the class, this yoga teacher, who I really respect, turned to me in front of everybody and said, "I want you folks all to know that Lloyd has made tremendous progress since he started this class a year and a half ago," implying that there was hope for this very, very uptight person and body. So practice, practice, practice helps. We know that the only way to improve our physical fitness is to work out regularly. Why should it be different with our psychological and spiritual health? It doesn't come naturally. It takes work. The following quote, which I found, summarizes my message for us today. Listen carefully. "Gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more. It turns denial into acceptance, chaos into order, confusion into clarity. It can turn a meal into a feast, a house into a home, a stranger into a friend. Gratitude makes sense of our past, brings peace for today, and creates a vision for tomorrow." I'd like to repeat that. Gratitude makes sense of our past, brings peace for us today, and creates a vision for tomorrow. My challenge then to all of us is that we commit ourselves to the discipline of gratitude. And I don't have time to mention all the things that we can be grateful to. God, life, family, even thankfulness for adversity, as we celebrate Thanksgiving this year. And kind of ironically, independently, both Irene and I had wanted to have use this quote from Master Eckhart. So I'm going to repeat it, even though she's already mentioned it. Master Eckhart, the spiritual giant of many centuries ago, wrote, "If the only prayer you ever pray is thank you, that will be enough."
Turn to your hymnal.